Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello from the studio in Nitro, West Virginia. This is Unreasonable Down. It's a podcast about West Virginia University basketball. I'm Josh Witt. We're less than 2 weeks away from a game that counts for WVU men's basketball. We're less than, as of this recording, 2 days away from an alleged secret scrimmage against an undisclosed team in an undisclosed location at an undisclosed time, where undisclosed players are going to play undisclosed minutes and an undisclosed box score will be kept temporarily and then allegedly destroyed. We're here. We're at the doorstep of a new era of WVU basketball. But I want to talk football first. We rarely dive into football waters, but how could you not, given all of the chatter? If you've listened to this podcast and you're familiar with the basketball program, you're familiar with hard times, and football seems to be in a tough spot. Losing record, going across the country to play in desert heat, the coach is on the hot seat, and this is not a football podcast. I don't have information on the basketball side. I read the information and talk about it on this podcast. So the coach is in a tough spot. A decent percentage of the fan base would like to see a new WVU head football coach. And the chatter on the internet, at least, is who could be the next head coach if WVU decides to make a change. And you see some names with obviously West Virginia state ties. Nick Saban, who retired from the University of Alabama with many national championships and arguably the greatest college football coach of all time. He is from West Virginia and doesn't have a job right now because he's retired. Jimbo Fisher, West Virginia ties, doesn't have a job right now. He's won a national championship, not considered the greatest college football coach of all time. But how many coaches have won a national championship? I'm not reporting anything, but I don't hear this name brought up, because when I think about who's out there as far as possibilities, you got to think of somebody who's available, who doesn't have a job. The first two guys I mentioned, they are being speculated. And I don't know if the current coach loses his job. There's still plenty of games left in the season. Who knows? But if it goes that way, how come nobody's talking about this guy that has West Virginia ties? Reading from an ESPN.com 2017 article, Bill Belichick has turned the New England Patriots trip to the Greenbrier Resort. Where's the Greenbrier at? That's a rhetorical question. That's in West Virginia. Bill Belichick, what's better than being the greatest college football coach of all time? Is it being the best NFL professional football coach of all time? He's available too. I just read to you, he's been in the state of West Virginia. He brought the New England Patriots to the Greenbrier for practices in the summer of 2017. Just connect the dots. Just think about it. But enough of would you just think about it? I don't have any information other than I just read to you that the New England Patriots, coached by Bill Belichick, were in the state of West Virginia in August 7 years ago. Enough of that nonsense. Outside of friend of the program, Neil Stone, the guest on this episode is the most frequent guest in Unreasonable Doubt history. He writes for earsports.com. He's got a podcast. He covers more than WVU basketball. Mike Azazza is back. Here's my interview with Mike Azazza. All right, Mike Azazza, welcome back to Unreasonable Doubt, a podcast about West Virginia University basketball.
Good to be back full time. I know last time you had me on, you put the big interim tag over my face in like 96 point font. I was like, oh, interim guest. How about that? It's weird, Josh. It's like sometimes football makes me dizzy, right? It just makes me dizzy. It's a long season and there's so much stuff that goes on. And for so long, you could kind of autopilot basketball season. Just things didn't change very much, good right. or bad, just kind of effect. Like I was doing preview stuff this season and going over things, and I don't know if I memory hold this and if people share this experience, probably for a different feeling. Like, it's a terrible thing to say. I forgot Josh Eilert was the coach last year. Like,
oh no.
Huggins has been gone for 18 months. We all understand that, but I had this blank spot in my head about last season, and I like Josh. I'm not trying to be mean to him. I'm glad he landed on his feet. I wish he wasn't on the worst team in the conference again, yada, yada, yada. But the page just feels like it finally turned, like just finally turned. And when I sat down and watched the exhibition on Friday night at the stadium, like I looked around and like there's Huggins sitting on the baseline, and it no longer felt strange to me. Because it's kind of been drilled in now that, yeah, new coach, new roster, new offense, new defense, just a new verve about everything. And there's the old coach watching it. Really good seats, too, that he probably got from somebody that he's friendly with in the program. So that's a good sign as well. But it just seems like we had this really ugly incident. Something happened in the middle. And then this thing tips off on November 4th. So, long way of saying, hey, thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. It was a long turn of the last page of a thrill, a very good book, but the last page took a while. And so before we get into basketball, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you a football question. Lots of chatter about the football season. So I'm going to pose a hypothetical. Let's say West Virginia somehow gets a late stop in the backyard brawl. Wins that, but everything else remains the same. So you come into the Arizona game 4-3, but two straight home losses against ranked teams. On paper, the easier part of the conference schedule ahead, and we still get the good time viral quote. Is there any change to the dialogue, to the sentiment of the fans right now with that one change? Or does that misunderstood or rightfully understood quote happen and we're where we're at right now?
Are we saying Kansas still happened too?
Yes.
Okay.
Same come back ass. Against Kansas. Yeah. Okay. Same Matt. The only change is you get a stop in one of those last two drives against Pitt.
It's a very different world, Josh. It just is. Your 500 is just a thing that people look at. It's low-hanging fruit. It very easily lets people jump on one side of the argument. It's there for you to see and to address and to make your decision based off of that. So when you're 3-4, yeah, it's easy to make up your mind on certain things like that. I don't think there's any question. And probably the bummer on that one is it's not only is it a loss at Pitt, who cares if that team is good? It doesn't really matter. To be up and to do everything, I shouldn't say everything, to do a lot of things very well. They looked legitimately like a team that could be what it wanted to be, especially offensively and or in spite of the defense. And then it all went to hell. That's right, hard to get past, because I think if you just look at Brown's career, you would find a lot of these moments, a lot of these losses, some wins too in the same situation, but you would find a lot of these things where it's just a lot harder than it has to be. I'm not saying that they blow double digit leads in the final 5 minutes very often, but you find often that they make things harder than they should be on themselves. Right. You could, if you wanted to, and no one wants to, you could really roll up your sleeve and say a couple things here, a couple things there. The holding penalty against Wyatt Milam in that game is one of the biggest moments of Neil Brown's career as a head coach, whether people want to admit that or not. I'm not saying he's a better coach if that doesn't happen. I'm not saying he's in this situation because that happened, but you took 7 points off the board and likely a knockout punch. Right. If we're being honest, that's likely right. A knockout.
Yeah.
And the game was never the same after that. In large regard, the season has never been the same after that. I'm not arguing again for or against Brown on that. I'm just saying that's a huge swing. But so is 10 points in 5 minutes. You know, that's a hard thing to get over. And he would have probably no justification to say what he did say on Monday 2 weeks ago. People would still be upset, but I think you would have more people who are willing to kind of hold the line for him a little bit. The trouble is that, like, again, this is something I wrote and repeated many times. The problem with him, micro, macro here, episodically, but also at large, he said what he said in that news conference. People are tired of the messenger, not the message. We're just tired of the messenger. Like, just win some games and give people something more, better, and different to talk about. And when you don't, you leave the door open for conversations like this and questions and answers like this, and for people to really point and scratch their chin and say, what's going on and why?
Yeah,
it's a great question, though. It really
is. It's fascinating. Well, it's just a fascinating, and you even can boil it down to even one play. Not that things flip on that, but it's interesting to think about. But we're here for basketball, and you mentioned it, Mike. New coach. The last page of the last book is finally turned. Almost all new players. We got to see him publicly in the exhibition versus UC Friday. And I know it's D2 competition, but that was a team, Mike, that I watched them, and it didn't look like a brand new team with 14 new players out of 15 playing together. Were you surprised by how much continuity you saw on the court on both sides of the floor, or did you see it differently than what I saw?
Yeah, I like all these players that I've talked to so far. They all have really cool stories. I'm mad at Tucker DeVries because I had a really good question for him, and he gave the answer before anybody could even ask. He said that their first 8 minutes were their best 8 minutes of the game. And I was intending to ask, hey, why were you all so good at the beginning of an exhibition game? That was impressive stuff. Like, the way that they scored evenly, the way they distributed the ball, they seemed like they cared about guarding and rebounding for like 6 or 7 straight minutes with people rolling into the game in an exhibition game, first time out, live fans, another opponent. You've seen those games, Josh. Those things get sloppy. The ball bounces everywhere. You're skipping it out of bounds. You're throwing it where a teammate isn't but should be. You have travels, you have loose ball rebounds that slip through your hands and go out of bounds. You just have stuff that happens that is inherent with those games. Didn't happen. And that was really impressive. And that just kind of gave me the idea that the concentration of players, it's probably like 8 people who are going to do a lot of the damage offensively and defensively for them, good or bad, I guess, when I say damage. But they probably practice a lot with that small-ish rotation, the people who they trust the most. I think when you expand a little bit and you get some freshmen in there, some guys who are late to the party, it's not going to be as crisp. But that wasn't the start of the game. So if you could take anything from that game and play it forward, I would look at those first 8 minutes and the first, 20-ish possessions. They're really good. And can you do that for an entire game? No, probably not. I understand that. Fatigue comes in, the other team makes adjustments, and you're going to have to use your bench and get to people 9, 10, 11 on the roster. But that was pretty indicative, I think, of a team that kind of has its act together, that has maybe kept things simple, not asking guys to do a whole lot, but also that really practices a lot of the stuff that you saw, which is getting your pass to a target, making your rotation. And instead of like a motion offense where you're just kind of going on feel and doing what you think your teammate with the ball is going to do, or doing what you think the teammate who's cutting while you have the ball is supposed to do, that takes time. This isn't that type of offense. So a lot of it, more of it, was rehearsed. And I think that's why it was so crisp.
Yeah, there's an inherent sloppiness you expect in a first game, even if it looks promising, even if you have expectations. And it wasn't there. And it changed as the game progressed and more guys got in. Yeah. So last year, Big 12 had seven teams, according to KenPom, in the top 75 of offensive rebounding percentage, and eight if you include Arizona. And watching the totality of the UC game, and you don't want to take a lot of knowledge based on one exhibition game, the work in progress thing that kind of stood out was the ability to get offensive rebounds. I think UC ended up with 12. Is that going to be the challenge this season? There's the talk about how undersized this team is, but they have length in positions. Is this something that they can improve, or do you think this is going to be the struggle all season, especially when we get into Big 12 play?
It'll be an issue they have to deal with. Will they struggle with it? We'll see. They're going to have to deal with it, though. You could get by defensively without great mass. You could be long and cause people a lot of problems, and West Virginia will. If you run out Javon Small, Sincere Harris, and Toby Okoni as your perimeter defenders, those three, that's tough. Like, I watched Harris and Okoni play, and it was really fun to watch those two. And I think Javon Small really cares about defense, and that was a knock against him before. Oklahoma State was kind of a ship going sideways before it went down last year, and probably trying to score points and save the coach's job there. They weren't very good in a bunch of different ways, but I think he cares and he plays. But you're talking 6'4", 6'4", 6'8". That's your guys who are going to switch and who are going to sag in lanes. They're playing point drop, but not point drop, pack line, which is kind of an interesting idea because you're going to have that length, that reach, playing off the ball and covering up gaps to deter people from making entry passes to your small center. But anyways, you could discourage people defensively with your length. You could be as tall as you want, as long as you want. If you're skinny and you don't have muscle, you're going to get bounced out of the way. And, so a guy like Eduardo Andre, he's 6'10", but he's a little bit light. Okoni is 6'8". He's a little bit light. Like, those guys are going to have a hard time holding ground when someone comes in and smacks him in the hip and moves him out of the way. It's going to be something they really have to work on. They're going to lose games because of rebounding margin. It's going to happen. How many and then how late into the season will be really interesting to me. Their non-conference isn't very good, but there's certainly some teams there who could win games or do some damage by just out-rebounding, keeping West Virginia from second shots or feasting on second shots. And that'll happen a lot more, and probably with more ease in the Big 12, but if West Virginia can cover it up better or even avoid those days in the Big 12, they'll be better off. That's later in the season, but that's something they're going to have to figure out in a hurry, kind of like while the plane is in the air in non-conference play.
And DeVries has shown this statistically in his time at Drake, that they are able to keep, with undersized teams at Drake, be able to keep teams off the glass offensively. It's going to be a challenge, and we've seen it done before. Can they do that? Because the Houston Cougars come to my mind as I'm watching it, of like, that's going to be a big problem, and they're going to have some mismatches as they go along. Do you know who was who was second in shot attempts Friday behind Tucker?
Honestly, like, I looked at the box, and I that was a very quiet 18 and team high, 12 shots for Tucker, I think?
12 or 13, yeah.
Yeah. Would Powell have been second?
Freshman Jonathan Powell, 6'6" guard, freshman. DeVries pulled him from Xavier. I think he has a chance to play in the regular rotation this season, even when they get into Big 12 play. What's your initial impression of Powell, and how do you think he'll contribute this season as a freshman?
He looks like he thinks he should be out there.
Correct. That's ready to shoot at all times. Yes,
that's a big start. And here's why. Like, and you just stole my line there too. So you're on my hit list now with Tucker DeVries for stealing my They really want guys to shoot in practices, and I would imagine also an exhibition game. And once you figure out if you can or you can't, do it in the game too. And if you go out in the exhibition game and you holster a bunch of shots that you normally take and or make in practice, you're going to get in trouble with the coaching staff. Not so for him. That light was green on the bench, right?
Right.
And then he tuned in, and the light was still green. So I think he's taken the encouragement he's gotten for his offensive potential that he received in practice, and he took that into the game, and that was good. He did not shy away from it. He knew this is another practice, I think, even though it did have a little bit more to it as far as like final score consequences other team, but he did the stuff he does in practice. That's going to be a guy who I'd be curious to see what his ratio of 3-point shots and 2-point shots ends up being, because he might have a little bit of slipperiness to him, and like at 6'6", he might be able to get inside. I think like physically he's going to have a hard time getting inside. If he can rebound and put up second shots here, that's great, but if he's just going to be a catch and shoot guy in the perimeter, you can make a living out of that. He's going to have to make, well, he's not going to make more than he misses, I guess. That would be a north of 50% shooter, but he's going to have to make a number of shots when he's open there, because there certainly is a spot for a guy who can stand in the corner and keep people away from, you know, the boards. They don't have a double team guy that they're going to, you know, require two defenders on the post, but it would certainly help if you can pull a guy away. Can he do that? That'll be my focus for him first, you know, small bites, kind of feed him this and that. And then if he can add more, that's fine. But he definitely thinks like he should be out there. And that's kind of a big time player from Ohio too. Like he's done this before. This is the same place that kind of gives you Kobe Johnson and Seth Wilson. And I guess there might be some fatigue there, but I think he's like more prepared to come in and do stuff than some of the freshmen we've seen in the past couple of years.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You're my 2 a.m. wild child, shred the couch on a whim. My little fluffy crazy cat who don't play nice with the kids. You're my danger floof. But I'll keep it safe for you, poop. You're an unnatural beast with natural litter under your feet, yeah. At least in your box it's safe. No more dust all over the place. Everybody without clay, say meow.
World's best cat litter for the world's best cat.
The confidence did not look like freshman getting his feet underneath him. Him or Tenor. I mean, on the defensive side, the commitment of 6 foot KJ Tenor out there was kind of another kind of thing I took from that, of like, even he's really, he's going to have limitations. I don't think he can do that in Big 12, but he was ready to guard, which is a pleasant surprise from the season that did happen last year. Yeah. The two guys that went to KC this week with Coach DeVries were Tucker and Javon Small. Javon Small's done it in the Big 12, played at Oklahoma State last year. This is Tucker's first and only season going through the gauntlet that is the Big 12. How do you think he'll handle that jump from Missouri Valley to WVU into the Big 12 in year one? I mean, we've got results of him doing well against better competition in this chances he's had, and then some duds where he's shooting a lot of threes. It on paper looks like he's physically been kind of sent to the perimeter. What's your thoughts about how he's going to convert to the Big 12 style of
really,
play?
It's really interesting because he was more of like a three at Drake. He's not going to play the three here. And that's a foot speed, ball speed kind of a thing. And they're positionless. I understand that. But I think if you put a number above him, he's probably more of a three than a four at Drake. He could do all the same stuff. I get that. But I think that you can't play him at three here intentionally. Maybe there's a great matchup out there. I don't know. But so he's going to have to make a living beating up fours. Josh, that's not a bad thing either, though.
No,
I think he can do that. Like, I think he has a skill. He knows this offense, and he's going to have the ball in his hand a lot. I think a lot of people obsess and maybe over obsess about who the point guard is and who gets the ball across pressure and all that. These are Division I players, man. If you can't dribble the ball across pressure or make two passes to get it across half court, what are we doing, right? And then from there, again, positionless is kind of a cheesy thing to say, but you don't really have a point guard. Everybody kind of taking and doing something, and they're going to start with Tucker up top a lot, going downhill and making decisions. That's what happens to Drake. That's what's happened here, and you'll see that work. So if he can be matched up against a four that he's faster than because the guy's bigger than him, that's okay. Now, will they make switches and put somebody quicker on him? He's going to draw a top defender a lot, but then that's on the offense and the plays and the sets to get him out of danger and get him in a spot where he's either against a different opponent he has a better matchup with, or find ways to get him running plays that free him and don't get him the ball. I would imagine the offense is pretty familiar with that because he's a two-time conference player of the year, right? He's gotten a lot of shots and points, so they have ways to do that. Just the obvious here, he's going from a pretty good mid-major program to the best conference in the country. Like, NBC's fine basketball, especially defensively. Some of those coaches are really good, and he was a marked man for three seasons and two as a player of the year. That'll be no different here. He's the top player on this team. He's going to have better coaches and better athletes running at him now. How could there not be a difference? How will they negate it? How will they work around that? You know, stay tuned. I think it's going to be a lot of figuring things out on the fly, but also you're not starting new ideas. You're just reaching into the bag and putting one in place of one that you don't like the results of so far. So trial and error for sure.
Yeah, and he'll get to start that with Big 12 in Allen Fieldhouse. The greatest test to start with. I mean, we can look at the history of how WVU's done, but that's different coaches. It's a new era. We'll see what happens.
Play 8-on-5 anywhere, too. Okay. Welcome to Big 12.
Yep. And so before I get into some quick over and unders, proper fan expectations for Darren DeVries at WVU in year one, new roster, new Big 12 with four new schools, going to 20 games. What are the proper fan expectations, or should we have any, for WVU in year one with Darren DeVries?
Yeah, this is one of those like qualitative, quantitative things for me here, and it really depends on who's hearing this and what they want out of it. If you're looking for a certain number of wins, I have some bad news for you. It's going to be hard to get into the postseason this year. They're not one of the top teams in the top conference in the country, and they're playing 20 games against some of the best teams in the country. If you're looking at an NCAA tournament team, you need to likely have a minimum of 17 regular season wins. Do that math. Like, how are you doing that? That means you're 17-14 in the regular season and you need to make some noise. You need to break a glass in Kansas City, right? You can't just go there and like leave and come home 17-15. If you go there 17-14, you win a game, man, 18-15. Oh, wow. And then you start to break down who they beat in the 18. But getting to 17 is going to be so hard, John. It's like,
oh, yeah.
They have some baked in wins. But like, here's the thing. When you add two games to the conference schedule, you remove two games in the non-conference schedule. Okay. I'm not giving anybody any surprises there. That's how math works. But you're taking away one or two wins that you schedule no matter what. Like, you're taking two schedule wins. You're taking two December home games, let's say, that are wins. And all of a sudden, you know, you're not starting at 2 trying to go to 17. You're starting at 0 trying to go to 17. So it's a harder number to hit for sure.
It is. And looking at last year, the only kind of power school that made it to the NCAA tournament with a losing conference record was NC State, and they got the automatic bid, and their coach was almost fired before they made the Final Four. So it's when you put in those parameters, then you're looking for 10 wins in the Big 12 this season. And for anybody that's not those top 5-6 teams, that's going to be a challenge. So I think those are fair expectations given the competition. You can't do it in a vacuum and say, this is a good team. You're playing against these teams and you're doing it more. And you're now taking a trip in March to Utah. I mean, the travel is going to be crazy this year.
More on the qualitative part here, though, is I just think this is going to be a funner brand to watch. And if you're looking for a fresh start, a clean slate, a new chapter, whatever you want to say, if you grew tired of a stale brand of basketball that was motion offense, and I think skill on defense at the expense of progress on offense, the time spent on one side of the ball did not match the time spent on the other side of the ball, and that's why things were so weird offensively for so long for West Virginia. Did not have great traditional guard play for a while, wasn't a great shooting team, could struggle through ruts, and that was stale after a while. If you look for a relief from that, think you're going to find it. This will be a much more organized and effective offensive team. There is skill at a lot of positions, even the five. Like, if Imani Hansberry's playing the five, he can shoot threes, but he can pass very well for someone from what I've seen in practices. Because I got to see it practice, Josh.
Right.
In an exhibition game. Like, there's skill because there's time put into it. I think they also know that they're not gonna become a great defensive rebounding team by one side in their practice habits. You might see a team that has to win some games on offense in spite of the other parts, and they know that now. Like, they know that now, but they're also kind of engineered to do that with the way they play their offense and kind of, you know, I don't think they're going to crash the glass on offense so much because they want to get back on defense. And I think that they are going to try to run anytime they get a defensive rebound because they want to get free scores rather than try to run their offense against really good defensive teams. But to attack with your strengths or because of your weaknesses, that's refreshing too. Like, if you know who you are and you're working with that, that's a lot better than playing the same thing and hoping that your round peg fits in square holes and round holes and triangular holes. That's not fun. I think it's going to be a lot different here. So if you're looking for like a more pleasurable viewing experience from front to back and a team that gets better and a team that knows what it's doing and what it can't do, I think you're in store for something satisfying there.
I mean, just based on the exhibition game, way less dribbling, way less pick and roll, pick and roll defense better, just kind of things that in your comparing, it is. I agree that the product, regardless of the result, is going to be easier on the eyes and a definite change than the last book. So here we go. Over under, quick ones going into the 24-25 basketball season. Over or under, 9.5 guys on the WVU roster averaging 10 plus minutes a game this season.
Under.
Over or under?
Under.
So Tenor doesn't make it.
No.
And then
you're going to concentrate a lot of minutes into your starting five. I mean, I would say starting five plus three, but I mean, like Yusufu would be one. Andre would be one. Who's your third guy off the bench? Are we saying Powell?
Is it Powell? Is it Stone?
Stone would be it. Yeah. Stone, I forgot, was not in the starting lineup. Yeah. So yeah, like that's eight. You're going to see a lot of minutes concentrated in those eight guys. And then you're up to, you know, Powell, Tenor. I mean, it doesn't sound like they have much of an expectation for Ofri, for Harris Elizovich, for Abraham Obadir. That's three more guys. That's not going to happen barring injury or something like that, which I'm not going to forecast, but I would say under. That's a hard number to hit.
Yeah. 1.5 wins over or under in the battle for Atlantis. 1.5 wins over or under WVU wins coming back from the Bahamas.
Under.
It's. I mean, you start with Gonzaga. Whatever happens there, probably a loss. You play Louisville or Indiana before you get a chance at maybe, but you might even, I mean, it's not what we experienced in South Dakota in the COVID year. This is different competition.
West Virginia has a wild history of the easiest brackets in those tournaments too. Like, I remember when they went out to Anaheim for the 76 Classic in their final 4 year, it was a Thanksgiving tournament, and I forget what it was. I think there were 11 games in a 12-team tournament or something like that. Every game was an upset, apart from the one that West Virginia was in. Every game was an upset. So they ended up playing, like, Dan Monson in Long Beach State, which was, like, the host team.
Right.
And they ended up – they just got, like, the invitation because they were the host team. They ended up in the final against them, too. So, like, they have a weird history of that. Gonzaga is going to be tough. Louisville, first-year coach, but they have some pieces there. Indiana is going to be good, I think. They have some tall players. That'd be a hard one the second game. And then, yeah, I think if you're 0-2 there, you obviously can't hit the over.
Yeah, and you got Big 12 Arizona and SEC legendary team Oklahoma on the other side of the bracket. Mm. 0.5 technical fouls called on Darren DeVries this season. Over or under?
That's a good one because he says he's never had one, too.
Zero, right?
Yeah, he doesn't seem like a very demonstrative guy on the sideline. And, I mean, Josh Eilert tried like heck to get him last year. I don't think he got one, did he?
If he did, he got one, but he tried hard.
I think they were just like, cut it out, guy. Like, I'm not filling out this paperwork. I got a flight in 25 minutes after the game, you know, something like that. It just, they didn't want to do that. I'm going to surprise people. I think that he's going to get a taste of the Big 12 in Lawrence and be like, holy crap, 19 more of these clowns, and he's going to take one before the year is over.
It's the number I'm looking most at because he said he's never had one. And knowing, not that I blame referees, it is like, that's what it is. And they, but I think he might find a spot in the Big 12 schedule.
I think he said that, and somewhere far away, Doug Sermons was sitting on the couch and he just woke up out of nowhere. And he was like, what's, oh, and like his sense was tingling. And all of a sudden he like went to the internet and he did a search for technical fouls and he saw this whole story and he was like, oh yeah,
can't wait. It's to Doug Service bat signal of somebody saying he's never had a technical foul.
It's just a whistle shot out into the skies. Instead of a bat, it's a whistle.
That only he can hear. That's right.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right, 0.5 home losses in the Coliseum during the non-conference schedule, over or under? And let me lay them out for you. It's Robert Morris, UMass, revenge game, Iona, Georgetown in the Big East, whatever they're calling that, North Carolina Central, Bethune-Cookman, and Mercyhurst.
Yeah, not great, but Georgetown's going to be good. Robert Morris is well-coached. They're well-coached. That's a guy who's been there for a while. He knows what he's doing. That's tricky because the exhibition game was so good, and everybody's like, okay, fine, we're supposed to win. That's a tricky one. I think Georgetown's going to be tough. They have a good coach there. He's got more of his guys in year two. They're going to be bigger in spots. That'll be a difficult one. And I really like the coach at UNC Central. I don't think that'll matter, but I think that's going to be a good game because that's a good guy and a good program. They've got some good things there. But here we go, rattling four of them that could be losses or at least worth noting off. Are they going to get every one of them? I would be surprised.
I think they're going to have less home losses in the non-conference than last year. I'm going out on a limb there. And then last over or under, 7.5 Big 12 wins for WVU going into the Big 12 tournament.
I have my number at 7, Josh, so I'm going to go under here. I'm looking at it and trying to figure out how they do it. A lot of it's, you know, using KenPom and projections and some other sites I look at that I think are informative. But the thing is now it's kind of pointless for those projections because you're using numbers that are pretty hollow.
Right.
What does West Virginia's, you know, offensive efficiency last year have to do with the opponent they're facing this year? That's tricky for me. But looking at it and where they play and the scheduling, you know, the road games and the time between games, and just I think some teams are clearly and will be clearly better. So then it comes down to like 50-50s or toss-ups, of which there aren't too many because they're so low in the conference. 7, honestly, Josh, if they go 8-12, that's great.
Oh, it's a celebrated season for me. Absolutely.
Yeah, but I'm going under on the 7.5. But I mean, we're looking at probably, what do you think here? Like an 8-3 non-conference, right? If they get 8 in the regular season, that is 16-15. That's a winning record. That's an NIT. That's not terrible for this year. And it kind of validates a lot of the things that you're thinking about this coach making the leap and putting together a roster, which he may have to do year after year. I think that'd be fine. Now, to that end, if you get 8 and you cut down that loss column in the non-conference, if you don't lose a home game to, I don't know, Robert Morris, Georgetown, UNC Central, whatever, right? If you go 10-1, 9-2, well, now things are interesting, Josh. Now you're at 17, 18 regular season wins if you find a way to get to 8. And if you don't, 7's acceptable too. Like, I think 7-13 in the Big 12, if you beat the right 7 teams, you could, and you have a good non-conference, you could be a candidate because I understand they don't take losing records, but like if you're making a team play 20 Big 12 games, that's not like 20 in another conference that does this. It's just different. It's not 20 MVC games, it's 20 Big 12 games. It's you know, doubles against some really good programs. So you might go 0-2, fine, but you might win 1-2. That still counts. So that's why the non-conference and beating those teams that we rattled off here, that's why it's so important. And like not going 1-2 in Atlantis, not losing a random home game that doesn't make sense to, like, I don't know, Robert Morris or UNC Central, like that would be catastrophic about chasing any type of a bubble in March and late February.
Yeah, I think 7 wins gets you in the bubble. It also gets you the pitchforks of, yeah, if there's any real, you're going to take a 7-win team, even though what you said, it totally get it, that 7 wins in the Big 12 is not the same as 7 wins with respect to the ACC, to the bottom of the Big East. Like it is different. So we'll see. I don't have tournament expectations, but if we get into bubble talk, I think that's a good season. I think that's where I'm at with it as well.
All right. So my question for you.
Okay.
Many years ago, my friends and I all turned 40 around the same time. But then a thing called COVID happened, and we had our getaway trip canceled. It's planned for the first weekend of the NCAA tournament this year. Do I buy the plane ticket to Tucson?
All right, I'm going to be selfish here and believing in jinxes that you should absolutely buy those plane tickets, Mike.
Oh, okay, okay.
With confidence, and that is a selfish move on my part, and I'm telling you that, but I think there's no concern about you buying those tickets, and you should absolutely purchase them. Because you get a better deal if you do it earlier, right?
You've covered your bases here. What you said is that you think you're jinxing it if you tell me to not buy it, right?
I don't know if I said that, but...
Implied.
Yeah, that's fair.
But then conversely, you've covered the other aspect of this too.
Yeah, I've covered all my bases. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yeah, thank you very much. Mike, thank you as always. Seventh time on the podcast. Thank you for joining me on Unreasonable Doubt, a podcast about West Virginia University basketball.
Josh, we need the home at home.
Okay.
The one game a year is not cutting it for me. I want to go to Allen Fieldhouse, and I want to have the Jayhawks come to Morgantown.
All right, let's... You have my number.
Unreasonable Doubt is under the Smoking Musket umbrella. Go to smokingmusket.com. Read the articles about WVU sports. Listen to West by Pod, another podcast under the Smoking Musket umbrella about football. Joel and Jordan do a great job there. Join the Smoking Musket Discord. Follow Smoking Musket on social media. Do all that stuff and join me underneath the Smoking Musket umbrella.
Big thanks to Mike for joining me again on the podcast. Read his work at earsports.com, earsports.com. Listen to his podcast with Chris Anderson, Country Roads Confidential, wherever you listen to podcasts. That's it for this episode of Unreasonable Doubt. Listen on all the platforms, or just choose one. Apple Podcasts, Overcast Podcast, Spotify Podcast, Amazon Podcast, YouTube. Until next time, I'm Josh Witt, WVU. For the 2024-2025 season, they have 0 wins and they have 0 losses.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.